I told him that we get to keep Jesus because I need the extra Y chromosomes to help me out. Could we just start by praying for each other for a few moments, if you'll pray for me to speak the Lord's words to you, and I'll pray that you're able to hear what He wants you to hear. And let us ask Our Lady to pray for us. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. There's a beautiful passage in the book of the prophet Jeremiah. That's I'm going to bring up here for you. Jeremiah chapter 31. The same chapter in which he talks about a new and everlasting covenant. A prophecy that we repeat every day in the Eucharist. This is the chalice of my blood, the chalice of the new and eternal covenant. In that same chapter, Jeremiah says, "The Lord has created a new thing upon earth. A woman protects a man." And not only that, the word man there is actually Gabriel, which could be translated a hero, a man of strength, a strong man of God. A new thing has been created on earth. And the commentators, the fathers of the church, say about this, it's a messianic prophecy. And they point out that it's such a strong sign, it hasn't existed before. A new thing is being created. A woman protects a man. And they see that, of course, fulfilled in Our Lady. Our Lady, who is entrusted with and who protects. The Hebrew has all these fun things with words, but that word protect is also, it's actually translated in the NAB as encompasses. A woman encompasses a man. Now, it's not a new thing that a woman is pregnant with a man. That happened from the beginning, right? But that's where that sense of protects also is happening. And then we see that in the most amazing way in Our Lady, that God Himself becomes so profoundly vulnerable and entrusts Himself to the care of a woman. That God becomes so profoundly vulnerable and entrusts Himself to the care, to the protection, to the love of a woman. That's what we ultimately admire in Mary. And that's also the starting point for talking about Mary's motherhood as motherhood. What does she do for so much of her life? Well, she protects, she raises, she forms, she cares for Jesus. Ultimately, when she's ready to let go, she also initiates His public ministry. When she comes to Him and says, "They have no wine." And she basically says, "It's time for a miracle." And so she's also the one that ends up initiating His public ministry. Now, that's all with God's cooperation. That's all with Jesus' participation. But Our Lady plays such a prominent role in all of that. And so that's the shape of her motherhood. But I want to step a little farther back and see, where is the fuel for that? Where's the fuel for being a mother who can welcome God into her womb and take the responsibility of protecting God, of uniting her own life with God, and then can raise Him and care for Him in so many adverse situations, as His life would quickly be threatened, as He was homeless from the very beginning, born in Bethlehem and then exiled to Egypt, and the difficulties in Nazareth and all of these kinds of things. What's the real starting point? How does a woman become like a mother like Mary? The starting point goes back to the Annunciation. The starting point is really hearing from God his love for her. It's in being loved by God. In fact, also even loved by Joseph, that Mary is able to become the woman and the mother that God needs her to be to raise his own son, to receive love. St. John Paul II, I don't know if you've read his letter on the dignity and vocation of women, but it is amazing. I just recently went through the second half of it, basically, for the radio program. And it's like, just thinking, wow, how did he put all that in there? It's amazing. So really, so beautiful. One of the things that he says is that God actually introduces love into creation through woman. Woman is the one who is made to be able to receive love. So love exists among creatures in the creation of woman. There was a love between God and man, obviously, and Adam experienced and responded to love in some way, but it wasn't until woman was created that there could be love among creatures, among human beings. We're the only creatures that love, anyway. So Adam was able to love because Eve was able to receive love. And it's the first movement for women to receive love, to let yourselves be loved. That's what made Mary the mother that she could grow into, was by first receiving that love from God and also receiving that love from Joseph. The fathers of the church are very clear, and John Paul II confirmed it in his letter on St. Joseph. He said, you know, there's a lot of emphasis in the tradition on the miracle of Mary's virginal motherhood. Obviously, that's a miracle for her to conceive a baby as a virgin. And there's a lot of focus on that and kind of protecting that miracle, and weird things are said about St. Joseph as a result. But John Paul II says the marriage between Mary and Joseph is as important as her virginal motherhood. As important. So it's not an accident. It's not like, well, it didn't really matter if she was married or not before she conceived Jesus. The fathers of the church see it very differently, and John Paul II likewise confirms it. The marriage was necessary. It was a real marriage. They weren't just engaged. It was a real marriage, a legal marriage. They had not yet consummated that marriage, but it was a legal, binding, full marriage. And it was necessary. Origen said, one of the fathers of the church, he said, the marriage actually threw off the devil. The devil was looking for a virgin, and he wasn't looking for a married woman. And so he was thrown off by the fact that they were already married. Anyway, the point being that when we hear the accounts in Matthew's Gospel and Luke's Gospel, it's very clear that Joseph and Mary are already together. In other words, she's already received love. So we don't know exactly. Christian tradition has elaborated on what their engagement was like and what their marriage was like. But Mary was a woman who received love. She knew that she was loved. She was loved by a human being in Joseph. She was loved by God in this profound way. And that's what prepared her. And that's what she had to keep going back to keep letting herself be loved, to be renewed in that love. Because it's only in that love that she could then take on the incredible task. Now, you all know that there's no real handbook for being a mother, because you all would have liked to have it. But the fact is that nobody ever raised your children before. And maybe you wouldn't recommend it. I don't know. But there's no handbook for raising your children. And likewise, there's no handbook for raising God. Mary was really out on a limb there, raising God. Now, I'm sure Jesus was a very nice boy. But what kind of anxieties does someone have? Like, what if I mess him up and teach him heresy or something? You know, like if I teach him that it was Isaiah when it was supposed to be Jeremiah, or like, and then he starts telling everybody else that. What if I mess up God's formation? It's a little anxiety. There could be anxiety there. So Mary had a tremendous task in being a mother to Jesus, but she could be constantly renewed in that task by receiving love, by receiving the love of God, by going back to the Annunciation. You know, we have the account of the Annunciation complete with the dialogue between Mary and the angel. Now, who was the witness for that? There was no witness for that. That was Mary. Mary heard that, and she must have repeated it so many times. How many times did she go over that event in her head? How many times did she return to that experience of receiving God's choice of her, His calling her, His promise to her, the words that He spoke to her, enough that however many, they're recorded by Luke, the scripture scholars say, I don't know, 50, 60 AD, that Luke was gathering these things, writing them down. 50 years later, Mary's an old woman, and she's remembering this dialogue word for word. That's the kind of impression it made on her, and that's how she returned to that love. And that's what she needed. And it's what you need to be mothers who can mother like Mary. You have to return to the dialogue of love. Return to the dialogue of love with God. Put yourself in a position of being a young girl again, chosen by Him, loved by Him, promised by Him, encouraged by Him. Maybe you didn't even experience that the first time around, but I'll guarantee you something, He was there. He was there before you got married. He was there before you conceived your first baby. He was there at the birth of that baby. He was there as you were struggling to raise those babies. He was there at every step of the way. Sometimes we don't hear His words up front, but we can go back even in our memory and rediscover, where was God when these things were happening? Where was God when I was going through these experiences? Where was He? What was He saying to me? Sometimes we can revisit it after the fact. And if you haven't heard those words already, if you haven't heard His words of love for you, I'm so excited for you, because you will, because He wants to speak them to you. Why did He choose you? You know, to be a mother, I'm fascinated by this mystery. So you have the amazing ability to have a whole person in your body. That's amazing. How do you do that? You don't even know. It's just amazing to be able to hold a whole person in your body. And then there's another dimension of sensitivity. You actually have a relationship with that person before you ever met him or her. You have a relationship with this unknown person in your body who was delivered, might as well have been delivered by storks, because you had about as much choice over who that person would be as if a stork came and dropped it off at your door. And so you have the capacity already in your womb to have a relationship with this unknown person and to love this person whom God has entrusted to you to encompass and to protect. It's an amazing ability, an amazing capacity as women. God made you in this wonderful way to be ones who can receive life. And that sensitivity and that quality to bring forth life continue to be a gift for your little ones. Really, nobody can raise your little ones like you can. You know, it's nice that you have husbands. You know, it's nice that there's a man in the house, and he does his best. We know that. But nobody can raise those little ones like you can. Nobody can do it. You have an incredible gift in your sensitivity. You notice the littlest changes. Your husband's oblivious to a lot of these things. You notice little variations in their cries. You notice the way that they eat differently, more or less, or however, I don't know, you know. And you know the way that they sleep or that they don't sleep, the way that they wake up, the way that they look. You're sensitive to so many things, and that's such an incredible gift. A gift that God has given you to raise life in its most vulnerable stages. The most vulnerable life God has entrusted to you. And He's given you the gifts to be able to handle that and to receive that. And as you do it, of course, it deepens those gifts. It expands and develops those gifts of motherly sensitivity. And then the wonderful thing that happens, I've noticed, is that once a mother, always a mother. And I experienced that very much in my own life, because as Jesus promised, if you give up father and mother, you receive 100 times. And He was really cutting that short, because I have a lot more than 100 mothers. Mothers just continue to be mothers. And they continue. They just like mother everything that moves. When their own children are out of the house, they start mothering other random people and children and everything else. And especially priests who look like they need a mother, most of us. So, but that wonderful gift of sensitivity, of relationality, a desire to give life, to empower life, and also in a way to set life free, to help life grow. And that's what our Lady was able to do. Again, always drawing from that fundamental relationship, always drawing from that fundamental experience in the Annunciation, always going back to that. But another thing that made Our Lady a great mother was the fact that she knew she was in over her head. Our Lady was not impressed with herself. She didn't say, well, like, it's about time. You know, I mean, really. I've earned this whole godmother thing because I'm awesome. Our Lady wasn't like that. She's very humble, and she knew her lowliness. She knew her limitations. She knew her weakness. And it's why she could sing to her cousin Elizabeth, God has looked with favor on his servant's lowliness. That's where God finds us, is in our lowliness, is in our weakness. So we don't have to cover that up. We don't have to pretend like we've got it all together. We don't need to compensate for all of our weaknesses. God knew what he was doing when he chose you to be a mother to your children. He knew that they were going to be more than you could handle, and he knew your own weaknesses, and he also promised to be with you and to never abandon you. And so Our Lady really knew that she was in over her head. She knew that she was weak. She knew that she had limitations. But she was able to trust in God. Be it done to me according to your word. She was able to trust that if he was going to give her the vocation, he would also give her what she needed in order to carry out that vocation. And the first indication she had is that she wasn't going to have any help. However, she experienced the doubt of Joseph and his decision. It's not clear how much that was expressed to her or exactly what happened there, but there must have been some way, especially in her sensitivity, that she knew that he was backing off. And so there must have been a little period of time that she thought, I'm going to have to do this all myself. That couldn't have been a happy experience. But what did she turn to? A baseball bat. No, she didn't turn to a baseball bat. Seeing if you're still awake. No, she turned, I'm sure, to prayer. She turned to prayer. And she began to pray for Joseph. She knew that he had to go through his own process. He had to grow in his own way. He had to come to his own discernment and understanding of God's will. And lo and behold, he had a dream. And he also was able to accept this incredible vocation. And he was able to stay with her. He wouldn't have let go of her out of any lack of love, but he might have let go of her out of his humility or a fear of his own weakness. But he was willing to stay with her. And so we can suppose that she prayed for him, and her prayer was very much answered as God intervened and revealed the plan to him as well. And what a beautiful moment when they could unite on the name of their son. The angel revealed it to them separately. He shall be called Jesus. And so Joseph had the privilege of really being a father for Mary's child, to give him his name, to bestow his name and his mission. So Our Lady knew her weakness. She knew that she couldn't do it on her own. She knew her own limitations. She knew that this was a task that there was no rule book for. But she was willing to trust. She knew that God didn't scorn her weakness. She knew that God would help her in her weakness. We do all kinds of weird things in order to cover up our weakness, to deny our weakness, to think that we've got to overcome our weakness, to... God has looked with favor on his servant's lowliness. That's where he finds us, right in the midst of our weakness, of our insecurities, of our poverty. He finds us right there if we're willing to open it to him. The other thing that Our Lady... I lost my train of thought. It's bound to happen eventually, you know? Our Lady in her motherhood knew her weakness And she knew God's faithfulness. And she had recourse to prayer. And so she was able to, in raising Jesus and welcoming him into her womb, and ultimately taking up the task of raising him, she was able to continue to be in union with God, continue to turn to him in prayer, and trust in the whole background. God had made her a member of the race of Israel. God had given her the grace of the scriptures. He had given her a whole religious life, a life of prayer, a life of community in order to live out. And so she was able to really build on that foundation that God had given her, was able to build on the foundation of traditions and practices of her people and carry through with that. So what do we do after he's born? Well, we go to the temple and present him. What else would we do? She didn't have to reinvent the wheel with all of these things. And as she carried out faithfully, step by step, taking him to his circumcision, in which he was named Jesus, and she had that confirmation, taking him to the presentation in the temple, in which Simeon received him into his arms, and then prophesied that this would be the one who had set Israel free. And then eventually also taking him probably for something like his bar mitzvah as he was coming of age to the temple, and then actually losing him. That couldn't have been a good feeling. Joseph? Yes, Mary. I think we've lost God. I thought you had him. We're in trouble. But even in that experience, 3 days of darkness, preparing for what would ultimately be 3 days of darkness at the end of life, she was able to discover that in the midst of it, he would always be in his father's house. And she didn't need to be afraid. Even though she had great anxiety, your father and I were looking for you. Why have you done this to us? And she was able to receive that answer. And then she kept that and pondered it in her heart. And so on the day when he would disappear again for 3 days, she could have faith that he is in his father's house. And one more dimension of Mary's motherhood, which is probably closer to some of you in practice now and is maybe closer to some of you in the future, is also what Our Lady was able to live at the end of the life of Jesus. Mary is the one who loved him more than anyone else and who was united with him more than anyone else. And it's part of what a mother's heart does, isn't it? You feel the pain of your children more than anybody else does. And you even have defense mechanisms like denial and avoidance to run away from that. Our Lady had no defenses. And so she experienced the pain of Jesus more than anybody else in history. But with the poignancy, that sensitivity, the same sensitivity that already began to have a relationship with him in the womb, that same sensitivity shared in his pain and his suffering at the end of his life. And I love the combination. If you've seen the Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's depiction of those things, he brings Our Lady in this very beautiful way. She has this combination of incredible strength. She has the strength of a mama lioness, right, who stays with him at every step. And she also has the pain and profound sensitivity of one who loves him more than anyone else has ever loved him. And this is the way that a woman's heart in particular is just torn in two. Because you would fight to the death for your children. And you suffer so much in another way to be so helpless in watching them suffer. And so Our Lady also, never going to leave his side, and at the same time, unwilling and unable to interfere with his mission. And so she stays with him. And the beautiful effect that that has, I love the way that Mel Gibson describes that, depicts that in The Passion of the Christ, is that he keeps having these moments after his arrest and he's so broken down, he catches the gaze of his mother and he finds strength and straightens up. And when he's there being beaten and he's beaten to the ground, he catches the gaze of his mother. He sees her move and he finds new purpose and stands up and he goes to fight again. And then he's carrying his cross, and he falls. And then he sees his mother, and we see that little vision of her. He's never ceased being her little boy. And as she runs to him, and he's able to catch her gaze, again their eyes meet, and he finds strength to stand up and keep going. And then even when he's nailed to the cross, and the cross falls to the ground, when he has no energy left, he catches again the gaze of his mother, who has never left his side, and he finds purpose again and strength to go forth in his mission. Our Lady was willing to suffer, and she suffered deeply. She may not have suffered the pangs of childbirth, as the tradition is held, because she wasn't affected by the curse. But it didn't mean that she didn't suffer as a mother, walking with him every day of his life, and suffering the pangs of childbirth in his death, as she became the one who gave birth to the whole church, as she became the one who gave birth to all the rest of us in our baptism. But Our Lady was willing to stay with, she had to let her son go. And I love the line, it's one that I've meditated on for 20 years, in the song Sing of Mary, constant was the love he gave her, though he went forth from her side, forth to preach and heal and suffer, till on Calvary she died. That's the love of a mother's heart, who never stops loving her babies, whose babies never grow up in her own eyes and in her own heart. And she never stops suffering for them and praying for them and seeing the best in them. Pope Francis has told this story several times of a mother who's, you know, her son is in jail. He's been convicted of multiple crimes. And she's there, and people say, aren't you disgusted? Don't you turn your back? And she says, what? What do you mean? He's my son. He's my son. like this doesn't even make sense to me. I don't even comprehend. There's no other category. There's only one category. The category is my son. The category is my daughter. Good, bad, indifferent, criminal, innocent, hero, saint, whatever. It doesn't matter. All those other categories are meaningless. He's my son. He's my son. And that unconditional love, the love that is a mother's heart is formed for, that becomes the image for all of us. The image of what God's love is like. God, who isn't constantly judging us and condemning us and finding all kinds of reasons to throw us out, but he just keeps saying the same thing. It's my son. That's my son. You're my son. You're my daughter. I love you. There isn't any other category. Come home. Come to my arms. Your hearts are made that way. Made for a lot of suffering, but a suffering that gives evidence, that gives an icon, that gives an image for everyone of what God's unconditional love looks like. A love that doesn't have any other category. A love that has to let that son go, that let that daughter go, to live out her mission. A mother's heart is always suffering. From the moment that the baby leaves your womb, every step is a step away from you. And yet, in letting go, you never stop loving. In suffering, you empower the son, the daughter, to be the one whom God has called that one to be. Our Lady teaches us all these things in such a beautiful way, and we continue to learn from her example, because none of us measure up in quite the same way. We all have our own collapses into sinfulness and selfishness, and we all have our moments that we're a little bit too weak and we don't want to do it anymore, we want to give up. What do we do in those moments? Let yourself be loved. Return to the love of God. What do we often do in those moments? Take a bat and beat ourselves. Stop that. Don't do that anymore. No more beating yourself. Let yourself be loved. When you see your example fall short of Our Lady's example, let yourself be loved. When you see yourself struggling and you want to give up and walk away, let yourself be loved. When you need some inspiration because it's really hard, return to the love of God and the words that He's spoken to you. Return to the gaze that started everything. Return to your husbands as much as you can and be poor with them and say, you know, I just need a hug. Can you just give me a word of comfort? Can you just hold me for a few moments? let yourself be loved. Go to the places that God has given you. Go to the source himself and let yourself be loved. And then you find welling up in your hearts the love again to renew and to pour out on your children and to follow again the example of Mary. God has given you that capacity to encompass, to protect a man. In a way, he hasn't entrusted God to you like he did with Mary. In another way, he has. Because every one of your children that you've led to the fount of baptism has been baptized into Christ. And so all of you are also raising God, because each one of them is Jesus. Each one of them has been baptized into him. And so he'll also give you the grace that you need to be able to love those children with the love of Mary's heart. We so desperately need mothers. And I'm so grateful for all of you for your yes. I believe and I know in your sufferings. I'm grateful for the chance that I've had to speak to a few of you individually and tell you these things. And I'm happy for the chance to tell all of you. The Lord is so pleased and so grateful for you. So let him love you. Let's just take a few moments with the Lord in the Eucharist, in what Father Chris called family silence. I love that phrase. I'm going to use that one for the rest of my life. And just let ourselves be loved. We need it. We can be little and poor, and we can let him take care of us, and we can also let Our Lady be the mother that each of us needs.